Welcome to the Tripod. We break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. And tonight is another special episode, part two of Ask Tristan Anything. We've got another 45 minutes of Tristan, the CEO of Top Sport, answering all your great questions. Part one went up just last night. Yes, I do look a bit different since then. My hair was already nearly all fallen out anyway, and beard was a bit overgrown. So I guess I've gone for a fresh start. Not sure if I look more or less like some of these recent doppelgangers that people have found and tagged me in. Judge for yourself if you're watching this on the screen. Can you believe neither of the people in those images are actually me? Some people reckon my dad's got some explaining to do. Really appreciate all the great feedback we got on part one. So I think you're going to enjoy part two because it's more of the same, as well as the final 15 minutes of the show will be my own monologue to cap the 2022 season, the highs, lows, achievements and challenges for Tripod. As I say, that's at the end. But back to this chat, Tristan, he's going to cover some future goals, questions about features, the art of odds making, market creation, more operational questions, all covered candidly by Tristan. But we begin talking promos, cap stakes, fair use. In part one, you got a lot of the background that has played into part of Top Sport's decision making and their policies and their choices to enforce certain policies. So we'll begin with a question from Taryn, and he asked about whether Top Sport could create a non-promo, non-cap stake version of the mixed matchup, which everyone could back. And Tristan gets to that question, but the chat begins with some background discussion on the mixed matchup and the exact rules around it. Everybody could back this with no restriction for all of 2021. And if you were part of that magical season, you know how profitable that was. Rolling into 2022, to give more background, you explained that you're going to be enforcing the kind of fair play, fair use policy on promos and cap stake type bets. And that resulted in some people not being able to back the mixed matchup anymore because they didn't have 50% of their turnover on regular markets. And justification for that, well, you can explain the key justification behind that decision.
Yeah, well, the key reason for that is that obviously promotional markets are that they're promotional markets, and they're obviously, whether it be a top-up token or a bonus bet or a cap stake, they're obviously markets that are an incentive there for punters to be involved. And if you're, and I've already explained the issues with relation to the fees we have to pay on turnover. We have to pay turnover on all of these items. And if you're betting loss-leading products, the expectation is that we need some business on non-promotional products to make it viable. And we're very clear with that. We don't discriminate in that sense. And I think, you know, a 50-50 turnover is very, very, very fair. The reality is, when the vast majority of our customers will use the promotional products as a promotion, they'll have their five bets with us on a day and they'll have their top up token and they'll move on and they'll have their bet on five different markets on the footy over the weekend and their mixed matchup. And it's nowhere near the borderline, and they're betting in a way that promotional items are there for, to be a bonus to our regular and our loyal customers. But if customers are only there to take the promotion, roll onto a new account, get it back, and then go back to their old habits, then unfortunately, under the current landscape, you can see that it just doesn't work. And it's not me being fucking mean or whatever the case, but like, it's just the reality. The only other option is we have to pull it for everyone. And that's not what I want to do. Now, in terms of answering the question, can we have a non-promo mixed matchup? Well, when Jacob does his show and he explains the rationale for why a mixed matchup has been selected or the rationale between the logic behind taking that option, there's plenty of other ways to get involved. If you think the Tigers are going to score more points, but you'd never think that, we'll give the Tigers another spray. But no, if you think the Panthers are going to outscore the Raiders, then you can look at plenty of different options out of our 300 and however many markets we offer on every one of those games that tie in with what you're referring to. Like, there is certainly ways to do that are part of our normal product offering. And it's just looking at that and finding it and getting involved in that sense. Now, the reason why the mixed matchup is one of those cap stake bets is we put the price up at $3 or $2.50 or whatever the case might be is, and we don't move it. Now, obviously, we have the asterisks in there. If there's a key player out one way or the other, we've got the ability to move that price. I don't think we did that once last year. When, like, as bookmaking, when you take enough on a on a game, you go from 250 to 240 or to 230, little minor moves. But as you can see, we're working in margins of 2 and 5% here, and holding that 250 when the price maybe should have firmed into 235 over the course of a lot of bets is a significant, you know, difference. And that's why it's classified as that market. And that's why, you know, we have to be, you know, realistic with the rules we offer. And I think it's very fair. And I think, as I said, you'll find the vast majority of people don't have an issue with it, but you know, it's one of those ones that, unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast, and we have to be strict on it, because the only other option is we have to pull the product completely, which I certainly don't want to do.
Yeah, like you could, in theory, you could put up mixed matchup, will win, $2.50, won't win, $1.55. You could have no cap stake, you could let everyone back it, and you could let everyone have as much as they want, infinite amounts on it, right? What's going to happen if everyone jumps on the mixed matchup to win? Because if it's paying 250 and we've won 60% of them over 2 years, you just can't stay at 250. You're going to drop. So you're keeping the cap stake to protect the price, because what's something that people complain so much about watching, you know, following any tipsters or watching tipping shows, is that the odds move sometimes, which is always going to happen. And one of the beauties of the mixed matchup is you've actually protected and honored that price throughout the whole round. So people didn't have to be watching live and get on within 3 seconds. They can just get on when they want and enjoy that. And you've protected the price, even though there's a big liability against you all on, you know, on one outcome. And I think you make the great point there that people are hit me up this year as if their livelihood was taken away because they couldn't back the mixed matchup. And I think instead of thinking of yourself as a victim, if you're seeing a market that is incredibly profitable, like the mixed matchup has been, it's not incredibly profitable because TopSport's offering overs. If it's a 50-50 chance of winning, you get $2. So admittedly, you guys don't build a big margin into the mixed matchup. For the promotional element, you're giving us a dead fair price, right? But as we know, like, something might be $2 because, you know, we've got the chance of losing in the event of a tie, whatever the case may be. So it's not profitable because it's being offered some great price. This isn't you offering $1.20 favorites at $3 or something like that. So if it's profitable because of the handicapping behind it, because we're picking good teams to back to score points, or we're picking good teams to oppose, exactly what you said, there's so many markets out there, team total over under, team tries over under, team race to points, whatever it might be, that you can actually use the insight and reasoning behind the mixed matchup and make even more money. And hey, you could put those bets on TopSport as well and back into their regular markets, which would then keep you eligible for the promos. So I think that's a pretty fair point, something that people should consider. Just on the mixed matchup as well, people were asking how can they lift their ban. And I think you've already discussed that, how people have emailed you. And there's a couple of questions on that, so we might move on because you'll get the chance to respond to that again. There's a comment there about some people get the ban permanent regardless.
Yeah, so there's a couple of instances. Yeah, the one, we give everyone a second chance, and we make it very clear when we email back that we can't give you another chance if you you know, go above that threshold again. So we're clear in that response. So if someone's given a warning and they get the promo back, we expect that there's going to be, you know, a fair amount of turnover the other way. We do have an instance where it's very blatantly obvious that there's multiple bets all placed at once or within a very small amount of times, particularly on racing, or you know, they're rolling into accounts, or they're, you know, there's just a variety of it where it appears systematic, as opposed to where you touched on at the outset. I completely understand and appreciate there's certain people that don't understand the rules, that are just hitting the top up token or just following the tips, and you explain that to people and they understand, oh, okay, sorry, I didn't realize that. They come back, they fix up the imbalance, and then we never hear from them again. But it's the other side of it where you can tell that there's people just rotating through accounts and betting in a very, very similar structure, that it's, you know, that I think are the ones that, you know, from the group's perspective, are the ones that are really hurting the ability for us and any bookmakers, because it's very prevalent in the industry, and it's not a secret that's what's causing a lot of these promotions to be removed left, right, and centre. So they're the only instances. As I said, I'm very transparent in what we offer, but I feel we're very, very fair. I feel we're the fairest in the marketplace, and I'm here explaining it to you transparently. I don't think I can do much more than that. And I respond to the emails myself. I'm there trying to watch a movie with my wife, and I'm firing emails back on the phone, and like it's just the reality. But they're the only instances. If someone genuinely doesn't no, then they're given the opportunity. And as you say, there's 8 games a week, there's 300 markets. You guys are giving 1 mixed matchup bet a week. Doesn't seem that hard to keep a balance of fair turnover to me.
And as I said about, you know, being fair to a fault, like other bookies might offer something that's really appealing to customers and they can cherry pick who they offer that to. And so somebody might be blatantly playing every promo, but if they're somehow still losing overall, the bookie probably just lets them keep doing it. And somebody else could be playing just a couple of little promos on one of your competitors, but they're winning and they're winning in their other bets, and that bookie will take away their promos because they don't want to give them to a customer that's not profitable, where you're taking away some of these cap stakes and promotional markets away from people who might be losing punters. And they might say, I'm not going to bet with Topsword anymore because I enjoyed back in the mixed matchup. And you might actually be losing money, but you're treating them the same because regardless of whether they're winning or losing, because I've had people message me and say, I'm not even a profitable punter and I can't get on these. And that's actually like the good and bad side of the fact that you are treating everyone equally. Like there's kind of an argument to both sides, but I respect that's the way you run it. This ties into that same topic again. This is from Matthew. He said, could you put up a feature that would notify people what percentage of their bets are promotional versus non-promotional to allow them to maintain the 50%?
Yeah, it's something that has been asked a little bit. I've certainly put it to the IT. I guess the reality of that scenario is, and I'm getting a common response whenever I ask our IT to do those sort of things, is it is quite a drain on the mark, on the database to constantly have to try to work that out. We've got, you know, 100,000 odd customers, and to be able to calculate on that on the run would have lead to performance issues on the website, which is something I don't want to do. And you know, like you can see from those numbers, like to be transparent, if people are only just trying to give us 51% of their business on promos, it's not the type of business to encourage us to continue to do it, because it doesn't work in this landscape. You know, like the 90% of our customers will have their mixed matchup and they'll have 7 or 8 other bets over the course of the weekend, you know, on following a variety of other tipsters. So if you're cutting it that fine and that's all you're trying to do, then unfortunately that's not the business in this landscape that we're trying to encourage. And that's just the reality of the situation where, you know, the vast majority of customers aren't in that space. Now, it's certainly something I put forward to IT, but to me, the performance issues completely outweigh the positives in that sense.
Yeah, I can see the appeal why a punter would want that, but it would be a feature that would encourage people to know how to do the bare minimum of regular punting to still unlock or keep access to the promotional markets, which you say might be costing you money. So I can see that's not beneficial from your side.
And let's remember that promotional markets are in place to reward customers that are loyal to Topsport. Like that is the reason why they're in place. And I completely, and I know it's something you push on all of your shows, and I completely and wholeheartedly agree with it, that you've got to secure the best price when you're having a bet. But ultimately, these promotional markets are there to reward customers that are betting with us regularly and using us as the number one book. And when we are the equal price with someone taking that without, you know, using the promotion. So that is the reality. And that's, I think, the mentality of the people need to, as you say, we're not taking away their ability to back winners. You can still back winners with us. But, you know, it is what it is.
And like, there's a few questions still on the same topic, so we don't have to respond to everyone in depth, but I don't want to, you know, avoid any. But Nathan asked, how do you compete with the big boys when you ostracize a growing number of punters by taking away their promos? That's kind of nothing probably new in that comment, because there have been questions already we've addressed, like how do you stay competitive? And you've explained also the reasons why people have had, you know, those appealing features taken away from them. But this particular comment, he says he lost his promos at Topsport for systematic betting, as it was described to him. I don't know if you know this case specifically. He said that it was because he upped his stake size in the NRL finals. I don't know if you know like the background into that as to what would be like, yeah, what would be described as systematic betting.
Yeah, I can't comment on that particular instance because A, I don't remember it, but B, I also wouldn't be able to impact, talk about one person's account specifically, but it would be the same rules. Like we certainly aren't changing our mentality based on someone upping their stakes, you know, like it's the exact same rules that we've always had in place. Now, perhaps it's a punter that might be normally a $5 or $10 punter that are having their $5 and $10 bets and then having the $200 on the promo bets, but that's just purely down to turnover. Like that's just the same rules. So I don't know exactly what this scenario equates to in terms of ostracizing certain group members. I don't think we're doing that. I think that we've already seen that there's a number of positive comments, a number of people that appreciate what we do in the landscape, where I still think we are the fairest in the game. And I've made no apologies for people that are going out of their way to try to not adhere to our fair play rules. That it's not it's no disrespect to you, but they're the rules. And we're just applying those rules. And I'm sure others, as you say, have very similar rules, and if not harsher rules than what we have, and don't apply them as fairly as what we do. So I don't suggest we're losing client share in that sense. As I said, we've got to try to reduce our turnover. That's the fact of the matter. And if some of our turnover is just purely on promotional markets, then that's a logical place to start, isn't it? So we're happy to continue to offer the promos, but we need people to give us a fair go at the same time. And that's why it's brought in place. And we've discussed this multiple times over the last couple of years, Jacob, and I know you always respond to the forum members the same way, and I can have that same discussion with anyone whenever I speak to them or email them or converse with them, and that's just the reality of it. So I don't think we're ostracizing. If I'm wrong in that sense, then I apologize, but I feel we give all of our customers a very fair go, and we offer a product that I don't think is available in many other places to the same degree that we offer it.
And I'm not just saying this because you're here, but I do think it's fair, for one, the fact that everyone still has the opportunity to access these. Like, people use the word ban. I feel like it's not even completely accurate way of describing it, because it's not the same as other bookies where they tell you you're no longer getting these markets and you say, why not? And they say, oh, our discretion. They never tell you why, and you never get them back. And Top Sport tells you why and gives you the opportunity to get them back. But the other thing, if people claim to be, again, claim to be a victim or ostracized, ultimately, you know, nobody is begrudged for betting in the way they think works best for them. So like if Toppy's not offering, giving you the best offering, that means another bookie's offering something better. So yep. Go to the other bookie that you can get bigger bets on, or you can get better odds, you know, and just use Toppy for what it works best for you. Ultimately, it's the same for everybody. And I don't know what standard you're being held to, because it's as if they're suggesting that a lot of other bookies are offering a lot better. And that may be true for some types of punters. They may be able to get certain markets or certain limits better than what you can, but people might want to think about why they are getting access to those types of bets elsewhere. That was the topic for promos, cap stakes, and fair use policy. Let's move now to just more general questions people have about odds and markets. Okay, and we can try and go a bit faster through some of these. Aaron asks, what markets do you make the most profits in? You put in brackets, anything I bet on, obviously.
From our perspective, obviously, you know, multis are ones where there's a margin there, because I think it's obvious that there is a multiple of that margin that's available anytime there's more runners. You know, like, you guys can, on racing, we have the margin available on every product, on every race. You can see what the margin is. So from our end, it's an efficient market. If you've got a market that's very efficient and you're able to take bets and not have to move the price significantly, then that's where generally the margin will increase. If you've got a Lithuanian basketball, whilst you're betting $1.90 take your pick, which you might be betting $1.90 take your pick on a NRL game, for example, when you take a sizable bet, you've got to go into $1.75 and $2.05 the other side. In order to get some action back the other side, you've got to lay it at $2.05 and your margin's completely gone. So it's those efficient markets where you can take bets, you can be confident in the price that you're betting, and more competitors. So, you know, like a first try scorer market is always a very, very good one from our point of view. It's a recreational type market where people will like to have a bet, a bit of a fun bet, a $5 or $10 bet. You know, they're not investing massive stakes, but they're getting a lot of enjoyment out of it. So they're the sort of type markets that, from our perspective, is the wider margin, your multis and your very efficient markets.
Part two from Aaron. What's the effect of introduction of bonus bets and top-ups and odd boosts, et cetera, had on gambling overall? He asked whether, as a result, are other odds have to be dropped to accommodate those, or do you get a bigger uptick in turnover when you put those kind of offers? He said, you know that the bonus people, most people get, is going to go on a multi.
Yeah, yes and no. So I would suggest that there's a, there's an artificial. I've seen one of the later questions is, why do some of the favourite runners drift? Which I'll touch on if you maybe want to lead into that question, just so I can answer them both in the same way, because I think it is relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do have that question here. It's from Owen. Why do short horse favourites tend to blow just before jump? Is it, as I assume, the bookie keeps the price as low as possible, and if punters are going to take it until the very end when the large money comes in?
Yeah, so I think that question ties in really well with how the bonusing landscape has changed the industry. So you'll find a lot that when, you know, money back second and third is a very popular promotion on horse racing at the moment, and people invariably back the favourites with those bets because obviously that's the best chance for them to run second or third. So you'll find that those favourites are generally artificially lower than what they probably should be until the death, when most of that promo type activity has already been done. So I think the landscape has been changed. You know, 10, 15 years ago, there weren't the promos, there weren't the offers that there are now, but it's a very competitive business. And in order to get people to your site, you need to offer these sort of things to attract a certain group of customers. And I think what that does is it as we've spent a large amount of time talking about it today, that it normalizes that behavior where it's a case of people are able, if they're smart, and there's nothing wrong with it as long as you're adhering to the rules, understanding that you can go to a variety of different bookmakers and be very smart about what you're offering. Now, the fact that we have rules in place to protect against that behavior, which is obviously costly from our perspective, is our onus, the same as you touched on it. It's if people want to continue to bet with us on the back of it. But the way the bonusing and the tokens have created an environment where it does reduce the margins in that sense, but it also means that there's certain things where if you know that you're going to lay a runner, then you're going to keep that shorter on the back of a promotion. If you know that some other bookmaker is offering money back if a team scores and the other team wins or whatever the case might be, is we know we're going to lay the Penrith to score first and win the game, so we're going to artificially keep that a little bit lower. Like, you know what's happening in the industry. You just got to be aware of it, and punters will play out their playbook, we'll play out ours. So yeah, there certainly has been a change, and it probably means that some of your punters that are just purely there to back a winner, like, they're probably being disadvantaged on the back of it in some sense as well.
Another question tying into racing. Nick is asking, do you have any plans to bring in live betting on horse racing? I'm guessing that ties into the earlier question about live betting in general. But he also is intrigued to know how bookies can actually produce live odds during a race. Is the team actually looking at the horses in the run, or is it kind of computer program based or based off Betfair, which is an interesting question.
Yeah, and it is an interesting question. I think the rules might actually be a bit different with live horse racing, where it actually can be done online, which again beggars belief. I don't know why that is different, but it's something where we haven't looked into it too much. It's a very complex sort of formula. We don't have the manpower to be able to do that race to race. I respect the bookmakers that do it. It would have to be some sort of artificial intelligence, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how it works. But it is a popular product, but it's also one that is tricky to get right. And for us, there just isn't the upside in offering that at the moment. If we got to a bigger team or did something differently, obviously it's something we'd look at, but it would require a lot of extra resources, which we just don't currently have.
I've seen some examples of them. The market percentages are through the roof. And if you're looking at live odds or something, and it's like a trotting race and something goes from $2 to 50 to 1, there's probably a fair chance it just started galloping. So I don't know. Yeah, again, is that AI or is that someone manually watching it? I'm not exactly sure how they do it. Probably a combination. Jaden has asked, Betfair coming up again, does that impact your operations? And do you think we'll see any other betting exchanges in Australia?
We've got enormous respect for Betfair. I've always spoken very, very highly of them. They're a massive part in this industry, both sport and racing. I know for a fact that when there's a very liquid market, whether it be sport or racing, it increases our confidence in taking a bet and not moving the prices as much. And so we do a lot of activity with them. We base a lot of our late prices around them because you know it's a true price. I think that's been an element of what we've seen with obviously and you know, we're not alone in the changes we've had to make on the back of the fee and the landscape. Betfair's had to do that a couple of years ago in rugby league. And it's seen a massive drop off in liquidity on their product. They didn't want to do it, but they had to do it. And I think that's where we see now across the marketplace, it means that the confidence level on taking big bets on rugby league has diminished a little bit because you haven't got that you know, confidence of where the Betfair market sits. So it certainly is a really important tool in the landscape. And is there going to be another exchange in Australia? I wouldn't think so. I think bringing another exchange in probably dilutes what Betfair have to offer. Like the more liquidity you've got in the market, the more effective they are. And if you were to split those into two, I think it would have a negative effect.
Here's a question from Nick asking about the concept of a trap line, which is discussed sometimes in American sports. So the concept that Las Vegas sets a trap line where I guess the bookie is happy to have lopsided liability, maybe because of it's an internal confidence that they know that the market or the odds are in their favor on one side, perhaps because they believe that the other side is inflated in the public perception. I think there's a degree of truth to that. Could you touch on your experience with that type of market?
Yeah, I always hear that terminology thrown out. Like it's not really a trap. It's just offering a price that you're confident in taking the other side of. And I think that's a common, fallacy, particularly for us, is that we aren't trying to balance up our books. You are trying to set a line where potentially you are going to take a bit of action both ways. But if you're taking some sharp action on one side and you want to push a line, then you're probably going to hold the opposing side of that line for a little bit longer, you know, to take more activity to try to skew your book a little bit. So if that's the description of a trap line, then I guess it is. But it's more just, you know, and it might not just be sharp action. It might be our trader's opinion. We might say, well, we really like Penrith in this game and we're going to try to take some action on Parramatta or vice versa. So there's a number of different ways to do it, but it's an opinion. You might find a game that with two different bookmakers, there's two trap lines where there's bookmakers taking a differing opinion. Now, a lot of that has gone out the window with some operators because they're just trying to keep the market price. But certainly for us, we are, you know, opinionated in some sense and we will try to look to push options. And it's just a case of, you know, we've got no inside mail, nothing like that. It's purely an opinion, and it's whether the punter backs themselves against our opinion or not. And then, you know, I'll tell you what, we get enough of them wrong.
I think that, yeah, the concept of it or the terminology there, it's like it feels like a trap. So there's a game where Team A is $1.90 and Team B is $1.90, and Team A seems really obvious and someone says, geez, that feels like a trap. I would have thought that team would be $1.50, but they're actually $1.90. And it's not necessarily the bookie, you know, it's not necessarily something sinister like, oh, we know that the game's fixed and that's why we're giving you a great price. But there may be factors that are not surface level that you're not considering, and maybe it actually does pay to think twice. Okay, well, I thought this team should be $1.50, but they're $1.90. So instead of just smashing the $1.90, maybe I need to dig a little deeper. Like, why do these odds seem too good to be true? And maybe you find out a key player's out. Maybe you find out that there's a rest disparity or there's a reason why the other side is primed to have a big game. And these are the factors that we try and tackle on the tripod each week, because I think it's really important to understand why the market is where it's at. You know, we don't say every week, oh, this line's 6.5. We don't get it. We think the line should be 2.5. We try and say, we think the line should be 2.5, but it's 6.5. And we think these are the reasons why, whether some factors are over or underrated. So I wouldn't say, yeah, it's not a sense of bookies trying to trap you in, but it is a sense of sometimes there's more than meets the eye with certain markets. We answered Owen's questions. What's Sean got here? Firstly, thanks for being one of the good guys when it comes to bookies. Not hard with your competition, but still, thanks for not becoming one of them. Two questions. Are there plans for Top E to offer more promotions like other bookies, even the smaller guys? Which, is it fair to say that if there's smaller bookies out there that are offering better promos than you, it could be tied into the fact that because of the fee structures that we talked about before, it's more viable to offer, you know, better promos to get punters in when you're operating at that small scale?
Yeah. And firstly, thanks for the kind words, but I also want to say that, like, you know, I think and hopefully this discussion over the last while makes people realize the landscape at the moment, which doesn't just apply to us, it applies to everyone. And whilst some big bookmakers might on face value perceive to be unfair, you know, they've got shareholders to respond to, and they're up against the same battles that we're up against, and they have to do what they have to do. It's not because they're wanting to be the bad guys, it's because they've got no other options. So I think that's important to note, that whilst it's punter against bookmaker, you know, ultimately we're all trying to provide a service that gives punters some enjoyment and some recreation, and that's where, from my perspective, it's trying to get as many people involved in that enjoyment as possible. So that's that. And where you say with the promos, yeah, at the moment we're on the opposite side. We're looking at trying to reduce the turnover, so we're certainly not in the midst of looking to bring out any new wild promos over the next little bit. And as you say, some of the smaller operators are able to do it because they've got a competitive advantage at the moment, which I agree with. I certainly think a bookmaker that's holding a lot less than us should have an advantage, but they should be doing that to try to grow their business, which that's the one missing link at the moment. It would appear a lot are trying to offer that to get a group of customers and then maybe scale back again at that point, which I'm sure that's not what they want to do, but that's just the reality of what they're going to find when they get up to above those threshold figures.
Second part to Sean's question is, could you explain the concept of selling away your risk when you're not comfortable about how much liability you've got and you sell off some of your bet?
Yeah, so every market we have a risk appetite on it. Obviously, for an NRL grand final, it'll be more than I'll keep going back to the poor old Lithuania Basketball League, but it'll be different. And then you've got two options. You've got the option to either bet back the liquidity or the extra liability, or you've got the option of pushing the price to a point where you're really encouraging bets the other way. So there's a couple of ways to go about it. We certainly do that on a daily basis, whether it be racing or sport or different product ranges. And it might not even be a case of necessarily your maximum liability. It's just that, okay, well, we've probably got this price wrong here on the flurry of bets we've taken on that option. So we're trying to attract some business on the other, which is, you know, like as you touched on, it's an opinion-based operation in that sense.
And is that with Betfair, or have you got agreements with other bookies that you can actually just back it with them?
You have, I wouldn't say agreements, but you certainly have the ability to get set on a number of horse racing options early. You know, like you've got your minimum bet limits in place. Sports are different kettle of fish. It's difficult to get set with most of the other bookies, but we do a lot with Betfair, you know, where you're betting into a marketplace where there's, you know, it's available on the table and you take it if you want it and you don't if you don't. So we certainly utilise Betfair a lot in that sense, yeah, to mitigate our liability.
Well, this ties into Josh's question. Does Tristan ever personally bet himself? And if you do, is it with Top Sport or with another bookie?
Not really. Occasionally if you go down to the pub and you're there with some friends, you might just throw some money into little kitty into the punters club or whatever. But in terms of actually having a bet, not really, because the reality is, you know, it's Top Sports, our family business, and every game, every race, we've got a bet on it. You know, like every race, whilst we're doing this, I'm sitting up here in the Rocky races have just gone across the screen, and we win on three options and we lose on three options and win on six or seven of them. And that's like having a bet on those other options. So for me, there's no real need, you know, and we can skew our prices in a way that we can try to influence which side we take bets on. So that's like having a punt, you know, where you're putting your opinion to the test against the sharpest punters out there. And that's how I do it. I've got no need to have a bet other than that. And other than if you've got a day out with a few mates, it's a little different. But I'll normally sit there and just bring up the book on the phone and see what we're cheering and use that as my bit of enjoyment to ride a few winners.
There's another question here about how you use Betfair from Andrew, but I think you've kind of covered that. And last one here about odds making, I think just a general question, so you can go in depth or more short response to this. Do you calculate most of your odds in-house, or is it matching, you know, across the marketplace?
Yeah, so it probably depends on the event in question. You know, like we certainly have some sports where we feel we we go close to leading the market. You know, like we'll put a market, a bet up, and then based on the liquidity or the bets we've taken, we'll move it and you know, we'll drive that market forward. On racing, we have our set of ratings, and we're not going to go up exactly what our rating price is. We'll take a combination of our price and two or three other bookmakers' price. Like, you got to respect the market as well. Just because we've got a line at 10.5 and the market's 6, we're not certainly going to go up 10.5. We might go up 6.5, but then we'll try to stay in front of the market. So we certainly have an opinion on a large quantity of markets we put up. We've got a lot of exotics that are derivatives based off a model that we've built in-house, which obviously are our creation. And then, of course, you've got some sports where that we don't have the knowledge, and we'll rely much more on the marketplace price than our own opinion. You know, I keep going back to Lithuanian basketball. We don't have an opinion on that league, so we'll just be market price in that. But by the same token, we then don't have the confidence to take sizable bets because we don't have the knowledge of it. So I hope that answers the question. A lot of sports will have an opinion on, and a lot we won't. And it just comes down to the quality of the event and the time, and then the bets that we take on it as well.
And again, thank you to everyone for these awesome questions. And I'm doing my best to throw them at Tristan. I feel like I've just uncovered a couple that might have fallen more so under running a business and operating. Here's one from Siebes, and he says, Toppy's obviously looking forward to build brand awareness, and you've talked about the money that you've invested in your marketing, sponsoring great shows such as Tripod. Thanks, Siebes. Have you noticed the brand grow as a result of this kind of sponsorship? Have you got a marketing team in-house, or do you outsource that? How do you think your social media footprint is going, and do you have plans to enlarge that?
Yeah, well, we've certainly grown the business over the last couple of years since we've been associated with you know, great shows like this, with a lot of other things that we feel have been beneficial in that. So we certainly have grown the brand and the presence and the footprint, and the turnover's gone through the roof on the back of it. And then you got to make this decision on the back of external factors to try to wind it back a little bit, which is, I guess, disappointing on the amount of work we have put into it. So, but yeah, like we certainly have seen a growth. I'd like to think that our brand name is now much more prominent than it was a couple of years ago. We've got a marketing team that is external to us that do a lot of the work for us, and they're very good at what they do. It's certainly not an area where I profess to have any level of expertise. So I'm reliant on them to make those decisions, and I think they do a pretty good job. And then they also handle the social media side of it, where they put up a number of posts. You know, then if you get a serious question, you know, where people ask a question, or, you know, maybe want some clarity, or you've seen on the Tripod group where I'll chime in and respond myself, then we certainly do that at times as well. So, yeah, there's a bit of a team surrounding us that chime in where we need to.
Last question on this topic from Graham. What are your thoughts on gambling companies that seem to target advertising towards younger people, and the issue that could bleed into underage gambling? He said he's heard anecdotal stories of teachers at high schools with kids talking about multis. But what do you think gambling companies need to be reined in? Or what's your opinion on that?
Like, obviously, it's something in society. We need to make sure that at all times we're responsible. I feel the amount of rules that are in place now are doing a great level to achieve that. You know, there's been certain rules that have been brought in which have mitigated any of that potential damage. I think there's, you know, it depends on the household. You know, like, it might be a case of the parents are sitting around the dinner table and talking about their multi, or talking about the bets they've had, which might flow on to those kids more so than advertising. You know, like, there are a lot of rules, and they have been amplified over the last couple of years. So it certainly is something that is being addressed. It's certainly something that I feel, even, you know, as I said, I don't like to bag anyone. And like Sportsbet, for example, some of the advertising switches that they've put in recently, where it's specifically talking about setting deposit limits and responsible activity, I think is great. So, there's always things that we can do better, and we have to be aware of the younger groups of society. But I'm not convinced that it's completely reliant on the ads or stuff that come up on TV, because I think there is a lot of precautions. The amount of inducements that are being removed from there, it's a minefield trying to work out what you can and can't say, and that's obviously done to prohibit people being induced to open an account. So I think in that sense that there is certainly some very good strides that have been made, and obviously it's never a final solution. Obviously things can always be done better, But I don't think it's just a case of, you know, it's a carte blanche approach by people, or they're actively trying to recruit younger kids to bet with them. I don't think that's the case at all.
And I think people can also see, like, some of your marketing strategy with coming in and sponsoring a show like Tripod, like your, and shows like it. You're sponsoring shows or promoting two audiences where you know the audience is punters. All right, last topic is just features, improvements, or future plans. And Winston just asks, in general, are there any new features or markets that you're looking to introduce soon that you want to share?
Yeah, there's a lot. And we had this discussion, and there were some guys in the Tripod group that really helped with some new features to add last year. And unfortunately, our IT team is just under-resourced at the moment. And that's an area that I really feel is probably one key area that is letting us down at the moment. We've got 500 or 600 jobs in the queue of things that we want to do, which will all be improvements and additional features on the site for the consumer to have a better experience. So absolutely, there's a lot of things there that we want to add. We just don't have the team or the size or the quantity of manpower that your biggest scalable operators have. And that's just a fact. And we're getting levied with the same taxes. Like that's the frustration on it. We're trying to get there, and we certainly know our product isn't the final or the complete product, and we know there's so many things we can do better. So we've got a lot of things. We've got some priorities there that I think will be beneficial when they come out. It's just how long's a piece of string. You know, I'm not just from a punting side of things. I think anyone that's ever been involved in IT operations know that these things take time, know that you need to test them. You need to make sure that they're right before you roll them out. So a couple of exciting things. I think we've got Same Race Multi coming up pretty quickly, which will be a nice little additional feature. You know, your search functions, I know, have been asked. I don't know enough about IT to put timelines on these things, but anything simple, we get out there nice and quick. Anything that's a bit more difficult, takes a bit of time.
And search function was one specific example Winston mentioned there, so you can hear there that that's in the pipeline for sure. Lost my place. Answered the one about live betting. Cash out, same.
Yeah, same box. Thing with the cash out. It's been one that's been coming for a long time now. The reality with that one is that because our system is different between live and pre-match betting, it's just very difficult to match things up as they move. And it's certainly one in the pipeline. There's also a regulatory thing that we need to be mindful of there as well. So it's not as simple as what it would appear. It is in the pipeline, but it probably isn't as high a priority as maybe a few of the others.
William asked if you're going to offer a builder bet for NBA season, and if so, when. That snuck up on me as well. The NBA starts in just over 2 weeks. That's something maybe I can organise with you if you're happy, as you've done for a number of large sporting events, for Tripod members to send in their custom requests and spend a few hours pricing them all up. So maybe the same again. Just all we can say, probably stay tuned for that, the Tripod group. If the opportunity's there, you'll be able to submit your markets for Tristan to price up. And this will be another one. Matt Blanche says, Tristan, love you like a brother. You've got morals, more morals than all these other bookies combined, but can we change the bet slips, please, like reading hieroglyphics? And that was, like you mentioned before, that we actually did an earlier episode of Why Water Punting where some of us gave you kind of a feedback report of all the things we would improve or suggest changing. And I think you're aware of that like on certain apps on the phone, you know, reading back your bet slip, especially if it's a multi, it's not the easiest thing on the eye. And that was something that's also in the pipeline to get improved.
Well, just on that, I genuinely feel our Mobi platform, not the app, the Mobi site, which goes through the Safari or your internet on your phone, is probably our best platform. And we're trying to replicate a lot of that onto the app because it's an easier build. I don't think that's far away. And have a look on that. See if you like how the multis are displayed on there. We're certainly going to improve that and enhance it. But the display on multis on the Mobi site is 100 times better, which wouldn't be that hard because the app's horrible. But it's just one of those ones where, unfortunately, our IT team was never a sole app building side, and we've been loyal to the IT team that we've had for 15 years, and that comes with its own challenges, but you know, it's something we are certainly rectifying, and that's a big one because I think our app certainly lets us down in some instances, and I think these changes, which aren't far away, are going to definitely improve that.
And even though I'm a punter and you're a bookmaker, I can relate to you on that topic as well, because we undertook building an app many years ago with Tripod and ran it for many years. And I know there's so much more than meets the eye, so many challenges and headaches along the way. That's all the questions that I can see. And there probably were a couple others that have slipped through the net, but we've covered heaps, and it turned a 1 hour chat probably into a 2-part pod. So thanks so much for taking all this time to respond to each and every question. There's no filter. There wasn't one question you knocked back. We literally have gone through every single one that I could find. And you've been really comprehensive in your responses to those. So on behalf of the Tripod Group, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I very appreciate the guys and the girls taking time to fire questions through. You know, like, that's something that, whilst I know a lot of the changes we're being forced to bring in and a few of the things we've discussed and haven't been entirely positive, I think that's something I pride myself on, is being able to explain and justify any element of it and being transparent. And you know, it's me answering the questions there. If you can't answer a question, you got to shy away from something, then you're not making a decision with the facts. And I hope everyone can see and appreciate what's occurred over the last while, and I appreciate every question that's fired. Hopefully, you know, you guys understand, and you know, you might not like every one of those answers, but you can appreciate it, that you know, I've come here and I've answered them all, and I appreciate your time as always. And it's always a very good, vibrant discussion and good platform in that sense. And if anyone else has any other questions, don't hesitate to fire it through. Even though we're on opposing sides of the fence, bookmakers and punters, I think we all want the same thing ultimately, and that's what we're definitely fighting for, and that's to get a landscape which allows some of these things to come back. And it's going to be a long journey. It's not going to happen overnight, and we're certainly still doing our absolute best to push the barrow of everything, and it's something we'll continue to do.
And as we've announced to people, you're not completely getting let off the hook anyway, because the Rugby League World Cup starts in a week and a half, and we're going to have Rugby League World Cup preview shows each week, and you're going to be sharing your insights, which we've appreciated all NRL season. You're going to continue to do that through the tournament for us. So best of luck there, as well as obviously the upcoming spring and for the rest of the year and navigating these challenges that you've got on your plate. And again, appreciate, because, yeah, it wasn't easy questions or necessarily all pleasant topics to have to discuss. But I think it's explained a lot to people, to give people a better understanding of everything that goes into the odds and the markets and the bets that are available to them. So thanks again, and talk again soon. There you go, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. As I said, that was part two. If you didn't catch part one, definitely worth checking out on our podcast and our YouTube and Facebook stream. And overall, what do you think? It's pretty grim, isn't it, to be honest? And I guess that's life, and it's the betting industry after all. It's a far from perfect industry, and it's one that's not going to garner a lot of sympathy from a lot of people, to be fair. And, you know, Tristan shared a lot of his thoughts and opinions, and so have I, and you don't have to agree with us. In fact, I'm very eager to hear what you guys take out of that and what you think. For me, I really do value the trust that we've got in the Tripod audience, that you trust that when we're bringing content to you, we're going to be completely honest and with the best intentions of the viewers and followers at all time, and telling it how we see it. I've done that. So has Tristan over the last couple of episodes. All right, bit of a monologue now. Self-reflection 2022, season in the books. Did the grand final specifically live, rapid reaction Sunday night, and obviously did a bit more with Tristan in part one. But for me personally, one new challenge was bringing a co-host onto the scene again. Podonis, really appreciated everything that he brought to the show. You know, I struggle with that for one reason. The results are so important to me. I feel like I own the results so much. When you bring someone else in, to a degree, you've got to let go of that full ownership of every tip, because otherwise, what's the point of having a second tipster if you only end up selecting all the best bets that I would have picked myself? So you have to bring someone else in and respect their opinion and try and build that into the overall tips that you share out on the show. And hopefully you guys enjoyed seeing into that a little bit from time to time, a bit of debate around picks or around a handicap, rather than, you know, nobody can agree 100% of the time, and it would be disingenuous if we acted like we did. Matthäus, you know, has a lot of experience in punting and has followed the pod for a long time too, with a lot of success. So I knew that he would come in with similar principles and that would help us work well together. But at the same time, you don't want to bring someone in who's exactly the same and thinks the same. So you need someone that thinks differently. We release the best bets at the front of the show each week. Hopefully you guys like that kind of format. That's after we have had a little bit of back and forth each week to decide exactly what those are going to be. So we may seem a bit more aligned on the show once we've come to that agreement. But you'd be surprised that we're not always as aligned as you might think every single week. So that's all part of the process, the selection system, kind of like, when do we just disagree and we've got to pass the game? When do I feel like I've got to overrule? Like, that all takes time to develop. And, you know, tipping solo doesn't have those issues, but there's advantages and disadvantages and you know, head noise that comes around tipping solo as well. Another thing we did was we played it relatively cautiously in terms of the number of plays we shared out to try and be selective. And that's to stay true to you, that something we call a tripod best bet, then it really is something that we've thought long and hard about whether it's worth including. And then when you have a good season, you look back and go, oh, wish we played more of them. You know, more of the leans went well than didn't. So, you know, we could have had better results, you know, beyond going one or two or three best bets each week. But the thing is as well, I think it's, you got to look at the show and what the value it brings to you is beyond the best bets themselves. And I am satisfied that we gave you insightful previews and helped people consider a lot of factors that would help them and would be important and necessary for them to understand to have the best punting season they could have. Now, in the first half of this season, we had the worst results we've ever had in tripod history. And there's many reasons for that, but part of it is just part of betting. You are going to have bad runs. From a kind of a critique point of view, you know, we didn't sniff out some teams and what they were really made of early enough. So you look at a team like the Cowboys, we faded them too many times in the first couple of months of the season before we realized how good they were. And the Titans are the exact opposite. We gave them too much credit for too long. And it's about not overreacting, but I think we could do a better job if we could identify that sooner. And I think it all culminated when the Cowboys played the Titans and we were on the Gold Coast. And at that point in the season, 6-7 weeks in, we thought the Titans were better than the Cowboys. But, you know, we adapted as well, and you saw that reflected and then towards the end of the year. And I don't need to make any excuses for our results, because at the end of the day, we won 60% of our best bets. And that's in a year when we did cop, to be honest with you, a lot of nasty messages, a lot of nasty comments during that run. And people kind of made out like we'd, you know, lost their house with our results. And yet when you stand back from the season and look at it all, even at our very worst point, if you look at the negative or the amount of loss we were running on an example $100 bet, we not only erased all of that, but we, you know, we more than doubled that magnitude then in profit for the season. So if you lost a house in the first couple of months of the season, you won 2.5 houses after that, you know. But the funny thing is, I honestly can tell you, I didn't get one comment or message from a single person who was nasty in the early part of the season to say sorry or thank you or you proved me wrong or anything like that. So it kind of makes you realize as well, something I need to get better at. Don't take it to heart or take it on board too much from people that will never acknowledge anything positive that you're doing, because it's very easy to point only ever during the negatives, and there's going to be a fair share of both. And something else I'll give us credit for is really sticking to our guns in the face of that strong criticism, when every week people would say, do this differently, do that, stop backing this team, start backing that team, whatever. We ultimately stuck to our principles and we did turn it around. And I think another aspect that people might say about the season is that you should make more bets towards the end of the year once you get a feel, or people might think, I'm going to hold off on tripod best bets for the first month or two because I saw they really struggled. But I would warn you that every other year, the previous 7 that we've done the tripod, we've had really strong starts. So the advantage you have punting at the start of a year is the market doesn't have that confidence in teams and in bets either, and you can find some real gems. So every single year, apart from 2022, I always saw comments in the threads from people going, oh man, I wish I just backed all of these from the start. I was waiting to see how you'd go, and now you're already, you know, off to a great start, and I would already be playing with profit. And then this year, it was the opposite. You know, we had such a bad start and such a strong finish, but it wasn't all great either, and I want to be totally honest about that. And I think the biggest disappointment for me is probably the results of the multis. Now, there's some close calls in there. There's plenty of one-leg losses, last-leg losses. Luck's going to factor in with multis, but This was the first season out of 8 years of Tripod where we didn't have profit on multis. In fact, as you can see there, minus 37 units. So having 1 to 2 multis per week, we only literally won 1 to 2 multis all season. And you should do a lot better than that, especially tipping 60% on our best bets. It shows we were picking the right singles and we had a good read on the competition. It is a bit tougher with multis because we do the pod best bets live, but then a day or two later, we come out with our multis, makes it nice and easy for you to follow. But you're betting into markets that you have already shifted and influenced in some degree. So, you know, it's even harder to find great value legs to build into your multis. But that's been the case every year for the pod. And most importantly, I just want to acknowledge that like the multi results were really bad. And someone commented the other day, this was the worst Tripod season so far. And part of me thinks that seems a bit unfair. We went 60% best bets. Like very few people can do that, picking all the markets on a Wednesday night. How can someone complain? It's 100% free. But then I kind of sit back and think, well, some people probably just back multis. And when you have had profit every other year of this of Tripod, and we've had seasons where we've had plus 100 units or more on 1 unit per multi, you know, records through a season. So again, this year, minus 37. And I think how I explain that, apart from, you know, I wish we had been able to do better, but the fact of the matter is, how do you get seasons where you go plus 50 units, plus 80 units, plus 120 units on multis, but never have a bad run? It's just not going to happen. It's kind of the same as I explained with best bets. You don't get the great runs. You don't get to go 80% on best bets for 6 straight weeks without having the run where you went 40% on best bets for 6 straight weeks. Like, it's always going to be up and down and it's not going to be balanced. And multis are even more extreme than that because a lot has to go right for a multi to get up because, and it's going to be magnified. And I can look back at this season and I can say, like, very early in the year, we lost a 25-1 multi on a $1.30 AFL favorite that actually cost us, was the last leg of a losing multi twice. That was the Port Adelaide Power. And then I very distinctly remember a Dragons Bulldogs game where we had a multi in the 20s and a multi in the 30s, both hinging on the Bulldogs. Bulldogs lost that game at Belmore, then went on to play their best footy of the year and win about 4 of the next 5. But that's a 50-unit swing right there. There was another game where Broncos played the Tigers, and we were on the Broncos. They were 18-point favourites, 2 multis on the line as well, 50-unit swing there. The Tigers were the worst team of 2022. No one's going to argue that, but they won on that occasion as an 18-point underdog. So my point is, really, I do not try to make excuses, but a couple of results throughout a year can drastically change the outlook. In saying that, I am still sorry and I don't want to talk about bad luck because I've just said we've had some awesome seasons of multi results where undoubtedly we had to have good luck to build into that. And over 8 years, you're going to get good and bad luck. It's still disappointing when you do go as well as you did on singles and somehow that should give you the best opportunity for success with multis, but you just got to cop the disappointment on the chin. That's the way I see it. But again, I'm proud of the effort that we put in, but I also will never disrespect our audience or people's intelligence and tell you that it's been all great, it's all been fantastic, and we've had a great year without acknowledging the negatives as well. And that's something that bugs me from a lot of tipsters, that they only want to talk about their wins. There's always an excuse for every loss, and they can always paint a picture to look really good when you conveniently only focus on the good. I try to be real, and people actually tell me that I dwell too much on the losses. But for me, it's like a respect to the audience of talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Was it the worst season yet? Well, depending on how much you play multis, you could say that. And for me, it was the toughest season as well, I'll be honest. And having that losing start really did weigh on me. Even though I knew it happens to everyone, it's still I don't sleep well and I feel horrible about it, and I do take that full ownership of our tips. And you remember that graphic I put up for some perspective, even though it felt like the sky was falling in, it really was only a very minor drop in overall excellent performance that we've had on best bets for a long time with the Tripod. And I've got to update that graphic. This graphic's not updated because we recovered from that low point this season. As I said, we won over 70% of our best bets in the final 3 months of the season. And that's a monumental achievement. And overall, if that's a bad season, I think that just says a lot about how good the previous seven were. And the other thing that I totally acknowledge every year is that it gets harder and harder to win. And you heard Tristan talk about that, how the market changes and how it's less and less advantageous for sharp punters. And the other thing is, and I think we have, you know, a little bit to do with this as well, we influence the market over the years. And I'm not just talking about our bets, but then you look at how the bookies learn from that and all the people that follow us, and then those people bet. And people are seeing what type of bets have been successful for us. Punters are seeing that and bookmakers are seeing that. And over time, the marketplace gets more knowledgeable, gets sharper, and gets harder to beat. So even if you are as good and working as hard every year, you're going backwards because it's getting tougher and tougher to beat. So in theory, every season would be worse than the one before unless you do something extremely good. I mean, look at our best bets from 2015, 2016, our first two seasons of the pod. We knew what we were doing, but going 61, 62% back in 2015, 2016 is easier than going 60% in 2022. I can promise you that. So again, that's the challenge, but I don't want to be the only one to decide or to tell you how good the season was. It's actually more important that you tell me what you thought, because that's, you know, it has to be worthwhile for you to tune in every week, or else we just wouldn't be able to still be here. Mixed matchups, which got chatted about plenty with Tristan, we went 45%. So we lost more than we won this year, but that's what we're meant to do with mixed matchups when we're an underdog every single week and when the average winning odds are still over $2.50. And we still had an ROI of 112%, which is still really good this year, albeit much more realistic. Look at last year, 70% winners on $2.50 odds. That's 178% ROI. And it's worth mentioning, Podonis is doing mixed matchups for the NFL, and he's currently at 270% for 4 weeks. And that's not going to be sustainable, but that's still a hell of a rate of return on your investment. And I also think we gave you a lot of extra value beyond best bets as well, where whether we talked about occasionally early lines that people could grab, and we don't claim that in our record, but plenty of other people in our group were tipping those every single week and beating the market by multiple points on multiple games every week. We brought cameos in, some very shrewd tipsters that added to our show that we really appreciated and that gave some great value tips throughout the year. You had the Five Guys multi, so when I say our multis didn't go well, well, the team of individuals that included the Podonis that we handpicked and put together, they went something like plus 24 units in their multis, just sharing one per week this season. And I don't include that for Tripod, but, you know, maybe and hopefully some people did get on those as well. Or think about the value tips you got on the Cowboys round 25, or even capping the season with, I'll say it again, Dylan Edwards, $11 for the Clive Churchill. So that was nice. And another great positive of this year was all the giveaways. We gave away more prizes than we ever have in the past. And I think my only regret is probably more people should have entered. We got a decent number of people entering every week. We gave away cash, jerseys, on Dabble, on in the Tripod group, in the comments of these threads. But quite a few people won multiple jerseys or multiple cash prizes. So it's actually a hard sell for me to the sponsors when I'm passing on the information and saying, oh yeah, this guy's just won his third jersey. Can he actually have 150 cash instead of jerseys? And they're thinking, how many people are entering these competitions? Is it really worthwhile? I think some people just got, you know, a fair share of luck. But imagine coming into a Tripod season and just having a free comment every week, and you end up with, you know, $500 worth of jerseys in cash for free just from picking some try scorers. So that was a great positive. And well done to those people that did get around and did cash in on some of those awesome prizes. It gave away so much this season, which I was thrilled about. And, you know, tickets to Origin and everything. So let me know your feedback again. That is the most important thing. Once again, thank you to everyone who's followed. It's not possible without your support. Thanks to the Podonis, all his efforts, as well as the efforts of our admins, Jeff and Dan, and all the tipsters that I mentioned before that have contributed through the season or contribute in our group or to the show. And a lot of these guys continue to contribute. So what's happening moving forwards? Every Thursday or Friday, we've got this No Morals show on Tripod. Not that it's a No Morals show. That's the name of the show. And that's Benny and Jason tipping racing. Saturdays is Prop Me Up, which is NFL prop tips with Matt and Barney. Sunday is Neddy Given Sunday with Neddy. And next week, Rugby League World Cup weekly preview shows from Thursdays. I'll let you know the exact time and that's going to be with Clarkie from Clarkie's Rugby League column. Stay tuned, there could be more. The NBA is starting in under 2 weeks, and in the group, there's just daily tips and write-ups and insights from myself, but also many other sharp minds in our community that if you stay tuned there, you don't tend to miss too much. And that's all I really know for the rest of 2022. And don't ask me about 2023 because I don't have an answer for you yet. There's a lot involved into whether, you know, a season of the tripod comes together. And I really will only do something if I know I can do it to the best of my ability and do it justice. So stay tuned for that as well. But just know that your support, even if it's as simple as hitting like, a comment, telling your friends, giving us a rating on Spotify, Apple, hitting subscribe, that can make all the difference. And that's the power of the pod and the power of the people that follow the pod. I appreciate you. We all do. Have a great weekend, guys. First off, without NRL, I'm sorry. But nonetheless, gamble responsibly if you're having a punt. And Lego.